Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I am your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy. Hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks the title of today's episode.
Jealousy, Both Toxic and Healthy, an interview with Shannon Bryant.
We just finished that interview, and she was really delightful. Whoever thought of jealousy as something clearly toxic, we understand, but also healthy. It's interesting. She has a really interesting spin on jealousy as a solution to a problem.
Yes, she does.
Which I really thought was interesting. So do stay tuned for that. We will just briefly today tell you about stuff that if you've seen and heard us before, we've told you about before, and we're still going to keep on telling you. First of all, let me lead with the book I'm working on, because that I'm actually asking for something of you all listeners. Yes. The book I'm working on, the working title is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. And so I'm collecting betrayal stories. And not only the stories of betrayal, which could be any kind of betrayal, by the way. It's, you know, there's, of course, there's like cheating on a relationship, that sort of thing. But there's also, we interviewed somebody recently who had been disinherited. That's an example of.
Right.
Or various sorts of things. Actually, Shannon came up with an example of a kind of betrayal as well. So stories of that. And also, of course, interested in stories of how it affected you and how you have healed from it to the extent you have, because those are often very inspiring stories.
Right.
So if you would just drop me a line with any of those stories, you can do that most easily by going to our website, ctin7, that's the number 7, ctin7.com, and you'll see there's an easy way to send a message. And just drop me a line and tell me you have a story, and you know, if you want to say a little bit about it, that's fine. And we'll either set up a time where we can Zoom or we can whatever, talk on the phone, or if you want to just exchange emails, whatever works for you. I certainly won't include any identifying details unless you really wanted me to, and even then I would probably, I'd probably demur. Nobody will be able to identify.
All these names have been changed to protect the identity
exactly.
of the innocent.
Yes, and not just the names with the identifying details.
Yes.
You know, they're all kind of archetypal, but I'm interested in that. So please, please do that. I have a couple of books you can find on our website. I have a newsletter you can sign up for. Let's talk about our sponsor's book, and then we can go to our interview.
Okay. That would be The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Yes, that's our sponsor, good old Laria. We've now begun to let on that just why we know Laria so well. Judy?
Yes, we do.
Why do we know Laria so well?
Why do we know Laria so well? Because Laria is my alter ego.
Exactly. Because
my
Judy
pseudonym,
is Laria.
Actually. Yes.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
So, if you go to lariazilber.com, by the way, you can see interviews of Laria. It's Judy dressed up as Laria.
And, yes, and if you want to see Judy dressed up as Laria, you can go there, or you
I have
can go
to say,
on TikTok.
It's quite the outfit. So do that. Anyway, let's get on with our interview.
Yes, let's do that.
And we'll see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Shannon Bryant. Shannon is the founder and CEO of TopSelf, a self-development company offering coaching, courses, and community to those with feelings of low self-worth, insecurity, and jealousy in their relationships. She is also the host of a podcast called TopSelf. Shannon describes herself as a former insecure girl turned relationship confidence expert. Shannon, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you both so much for having me. I'm excited about our conversation.
Well, we're delighted to have you. So we always like to start off by asking our guests, how did you get into the work you do? You know, tell us something about your own journey that brought you to where you are.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, if somebody would have told me 8 years ago that I'd be helping other people overcome insecurity and jealousy in their relationship, I would have said, there's no way. One, because I grew up in a very chaotic environment. My father was an alcoholic. And so I didn't have much contact with him after the time I was 12. So I certainly had some of those feelings of abandonment and some issues there that then later, of course, developed in my own relationships where I was jealous and insecure. And I just thought, you know, Two, this just is the way that I'm made. It's in my DNA, this is just who I am. And I thought I was the only person that felt like this, that had those, we hear that all the time, like, oh, somebody else actually has the same thing. So when I found that out, and it was actually, I was one of the therapists who I saw for quite a while gave me the ACA laundry list, Adult Children of Alcoholics, the laundry list, and those 14 characteristics. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, so if there's something on paper, that means one, I can't be the only person. I didn't write this, so somebody else felt that. Two, then there must be a solution to it. And so I started doing my own, research and really digging in and spending some time and making that my priority and my focus because it was really damaging my own relationship. So here I am today, saved my relationship, thank goodness, and now trying to help other people so that it doesn't take them so long. I suffered with it for decades.
So you said if you had told yourself 8 years ago, so what was going on in your life then?
In my life then, so it was relationship after relationship. I either stayed in a relationship too long because of my insecurities. I felt like that's the way I deserved to be treated, or I was really damaging relationships that, maybe were with some perfectly fine people because of my jealousy. And when I met my now husband, we were dating, and I was the coolest girlfriend for a while until you develop feelings. And then all of that insecurity came out, the jealousy came out, and it got so bad in our relationship. We couldn't go to dinner together anymore. We couldn't go to the movies. Any types of vacations were just miserable. So it was really affecting our relationship. And it was certainly affecting my partner, it was affecting him at the time. To where he then started to change some of his behaviors and his personality.
It is often relational, isn't it? It's sort of we do affect each other, especially as you get more and
And you
more
feed off
involved.
those insecurities and start downward.
Yeah, it definitely caused many arguments in our relationship.
And I'm not sure if you want to get into, how did you turn that around? I'll ask this question, but you can, take it whatever direction you like. One of the things I was intrigued by seeing in your, I think it was on your website, you said that jealousy in a relationship isn't the problem, it's a solution. And I'm curious, that's a, I love statements like that. I love paradoxical statements. I'm a sucker for a good paradox. But tell us what you mean by that.
So I think people who experience this extreme type of jealousy, and there are many, many people out there, they're just not talking about it because it's something that they feel really embarrassed and ashamed by. But if they're experiencing that jealousy, they feel like, it's the problem seems so huge because it becomes the big focus in the relationship. And so it feels like this is a huge problem within me. There's something wrong with me. And what jealousy really is there to say, to try to solve something. Way back when it was, yes, I want to protect this person who is going to protect my family, who's going to give me children and be, the provider for the family. We don't necessarily need to be that way in today's world, but that feeling of somebody's going to take something that I have. And so we look at it as a problem. Really, jealousy is trying to solve something for you. It's that solution. So what is it that it's trying to solve? And that's where I started. Like, why do I have this? What is going on? And when I thought about, wait a second, it's there just like anything else. If I touch my hand on a hot burner, I'm going to have a reaction. That's intentional, right? Not to just hurt me, but that is intentional. And same thing with jealousy. It's intentional. It's there to say, hey, you need to look at this and see what it's trying to solve for you.
No, that I like that a lot. It dovetails nicely with one of my favorite things that I point out to practically every couple I see. I see almost all couples now, to individuals too, but especially to couples. I will point out in the first session after I've got to know them for, 10 minutes, and I'll say, well, now we're old buddies, so because I've known you for 10 minutes. And the one thing that's pretty obvious is neither one of you is crazy. And I don't mean to make fun of, serious mental health issues. And every once in a great while, there's been a couple I haven't said that to because somebody's crazy. There's some psychosis happening. But typically, that's so fascinating with things like jealousy. You're pointing out that this is an evolutionary, by evolution, it's designed to solve a problem, is there for an important reason. So you're not crazy. This isn't the workings of a diseased brain. This is like what happens to normal people. Let's figure out what's going on. And I think that's the word I tend to use for that attitude is faith. It's like, okay, this whole existence business is basically right, even when it's uncomfortable. Let's figure it out.
And, I think that that brings to a good point of, part of it is really believing that that change is possible. I'm not just made this way. I mean, certainly that's kind of how it started, right? But I don't have to stay that way. It's just trying to solve this problem. So how do I do that? And where can I dig in? And that's where, a lot of times it's starting with that, what I say, power of one, O-N-E, being open to new, and then fill in the blank with the E, open to new evidence, open to new explanations, open to new, examples, because that's where it really comes in. When we get so, our belief system, and we get so laser focused on this is how things are, because that's what I've always seen. We're always seeing that because, yes, it's happened. And then we're super hyper focused on it. And so then we see it all over the place. You have to become really open to, okay, did he really look at her in lust? Or was he looking at a painting on the wall? Was he looking to see where the restroom is? When my husband and I, before I started working on this, when we would go to a restaurant, I already saw all the threats in the room before we even put in our name, with the hostess. I was already like, who is the threat? And inevitably, we would sit right next to the threat every time, right? Every time, and him facing that direction. And so I had to start going, is he just looking for the restroom? Could that be a possibility?
Wow. So it sounds like you are pretty toxic, like a toxic jealousy. So how do you distinguish between toxic jealousy and healthy jealousy?
When this jealousy, for one, if you have this extreme jealousy, it is something that you are in constant, your mind is constantly racing with thoughts. You have an upset stomach. You feel like, you're anxious all the time because you're worried about your partner. You're checking their phone, you're checking their email, you're checking social media, their text messages, location services. I said before, if I could have gotten paid for the time I spent doing all of those things, I would have made some decent money. And but it does become habitual then to where you're checking for a constant, it's like you're checking for signs of fidelity. Well, there's no signs of fidelity,
It's interesting. You can't
right?
prove a negative. It's very difficult.
Yes. And so we get into that loop of I'm going to look to see, well, I didn't see anything. So it's getting that sort of that hit or, okay, I got a little bit of reassurance, but it comes right back. And so then I'm checking again. Well, maybe, or you think, well, maybe they're just really good at hiding it, or I'm not looking in the right places or at the right time. And so that's when it really becomes toxic. And I will say, even more so, in especially in my case, and it happens most of the time, when your partner now feels like when they're walking, they can't look up, or they can't look in certain directions, or they can't be themselves and say hi to someone or be friendly. That's when when you've got all of those things going on, that's toxic jealousy.
It's interesting because I want to throw in maybe another side of, I guess, what I would call healthy jealousy. And it also, well, see what you think about this because it occurs to me, one of the things I'm imagining in your situation you were describing is, and I often have, this comes up with couples, you, of course, you married a man who is heterosexual, presumably, right? You married a guy who's into women. You want him to be into you in particular, but you also wanted a guy who finds women attractive, just in general. You also presumably wanted a guy who wasn't a jerk. Do you know what I mean? In other words, who wasn't going to disrespect you
Right, and flirt with
and
other women.
flirt with other
Right.
women, especially in your presence, but even not. But this is where the idea, like, I want to feel like if I was a jerk to my lovely wife here, that she would be attracted to all kinds of other guys. I like that she's attracted to guys. You know, I'd want her to be attracted to me, especially, which means I better be good. In other words, I better be capable of being jealous of her attentions elsewhere to keep me honest, because she's a catch. You know, she could get anybody she wants, and that's it. So I want to feel that sense of, oh, I better be careful because she could wander. You know, her eye could wander. Look, I trust her, but you know, I mean, if I'm enough of a jerk, to me that sounds like healthy jealousy. I don't know if that does that fit into your rubric?
No, I agree with you. I think there's a certain amount of that that's totally fine. And it's very natural. It's very natural to have that tinge of jealousy, like, oh, wait, okay. So I see that person. You know, my husband, we went on a trip to Costa Rica and we were doing some snorkeling and different things and pretty recently. And underwater, you know, he describes that the scuba diver grabs my hands and he was like, and then you guys were kicking your flippers up in my face and all the bubbles everywhere. And he thought, okay, you really like you just swimming off in the sunset with the scuba instructor. That's healthy. It's okay that you're like, oh, okay. Very interesting. But when it starts to really run your life and keeps you from doing things like that, that's where it gets really toxic.
So you were gonna ask something?
No, I know that answered my question
Oh,
about
yeah.
the healthy and the toxic.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that element that's always tricky when you're talking about particularly sexual relationships or intimate relationships more generally, I think. And I happen to be, I don't know if you're aware of this, our listeners, if our regular listeners know this, I happen to be working on a book currently where the working title is Betrayal, Faith, and Forgiveness. And betrayal, of course, jealousy comes up a lot in situations involving actual betrayal. I know I've worked with lots of folks who were cheated on in a previous relationship, which certainly drives their sensitivity in later relationships. They're worried of, you know, once burned, twice shy. There's that. But then there's that other piece of it, which is, well, sort of similar to what I was talking about before. It's like, to some extent, the idea that people are open to experience better be allowable. Do you know? I'm not talking about cheating. I'm just saying being alive to the existence of attractive people in the world. And that can actually be a positive in a relationship. You know, somebody can feel, oh, that's a sexy person, and oh, isn't it lovely? I have a partner whom I love that I can take that sexiness out on, you know?
And I think, you know, it's where it becomes that problem is when we're constantly, sort of to your point, when we're constantly relying on our partner to reassure us, to
Yes.
give us that stability or that we're good enough, that we are worthy of their love and we're worthy of being treated properly, then, you know, too much reassurance on our partner, that's where we get to when we're being jealous. Because when I'm feeling jealous, I'm going to my partner and going, you have to reassure me that everything is okay. And most of the time, they cannot reassure you in that moment. Your emotions are high, and you really aren't hearing what they have to say. So
So
it's a
someone
difficult.
comes to you, they have a problem with jealousy. Where do you even start? Like, how do you even start helping this person that, you know?
So I always start with self-awareness because I say, you know, you can't change what's in your way unless you look at what you think, do, and say. And when we're somebody who has this extreme jealousy, we are saying things to our partners, one that we may not realize that we're saying or as often as we're saying them. And it's certainly damaging to the relationship. And so I always use myself because people, you know, they're ashamed to say, I'm embarrassed or I'm saying these things to my partner. So I always use my own examples, of course. But when my husband would shave, just him shaving, and I would say, oh, who are you seeing tomorrow? Or what are you doing tomorrow? Or, you know, oh, or if he was telling me a story like, oh, remember when this happened? And I would say, oh, that must have been your other girlfriend. It's those little gut punches, those little things that we say consistently that damage the relationship. And most of us in this extreme jealousy are not aware how often we're doing that and the things that we're doing. So I usually have them start with go through and list what you think, do, and say. The thinking things are big, of course. We start to go down this rabbit hole, and I know Bruce, you're probably familiar with the storytelling that we do, and we make up this entire scenario. I would see a hostess at the restaurant who I thought my partner may think is attractive. And in my head, by the time we're done with dinner, I have them running off to Mexico together, So we can really go down those patterns. So becoming self-aware of like what are the things that I'm telling myself and how often am I doing that and what am I saying to my partner, I think is a really great place to start.
Well, that's got to be a tough place for you to live, making up all those scenarios in your head and why the effect that it has on both of you.
One of the things, and I hear it over and over again from my clients and experienced it myself, is, man, I know that your partner's struggling. The person that this is being directed to, I know that they're struggling. I know that they're frustrated. I know that they're angry and upset. There's no one else who would wish more to not have these feelings, to not feel this way than me.
Yeah,
It's that
of
person
course.
who's suffering because it's miserable. It's constant all day long, every day, of feeling that heightened anxiety. It's a tough place to live, Judy.
Yeah, so now you had mentioned that your dad was an alcoholic, and at around after 12 or so, you had nothing really much to do with him. Did your parents split up, or did you just them off, or what happened?
So my parents divorced when I was 12, and after that, I didn't. My dad would do the thing, like gonna pick up me and my little brother, and he was supposedly going through AA and not drinking anymore. And then I had spent the night at a friend's house because I hadn't really done that my entire childhood. I wasn't able to have somebody spend the night at our house, certainly. And I was always afraid to leave. So I spent the night with a friend, and my dad picked up my little brother first, and he just ran out to the car, from my mom's. And he came over to my friend's and picked me up. And I saw he had a beer in between his legs driving the car. And so I was like, at 12, I had no idea really what implications it would have. But I said, as long as you're drinking, I don't want to have anything to do with you. So I got my little brother out of the car, and we didn't go with him. And I didn't hear from him again until I was 25. I heard from him once. And then I didn't hear from him again. We didn't have a relationship until just these last 3 years, which were the last 3 years of his life. He just passed away last September. The beautiful part of that is we were able to rekindle our relationship, and I really learned a lot through that. And part of it, still kind of coming out of this jealousy piece of, again, being really open to explanations. I always thought growing up, which is what got me into this situation, I thought if my own dad doesn't love me, why would anybody else? I'm not good enough for anyone else to love me. Wasn't true. So again, going back to those stories, our beliefs that we tell ourselves that get us into some of these situations, that wasn't true. My dad had a disease. He wasn't, he didn't not love me, but
As a kid, that's how you perceive it.
And I've often pointed out to folks, there's good reason why people perceive that, even though it is simply not true. Everybody is lovable and should feel lovable. And yet, if I'm being treated that way, I'd rather feel like I have some control over it than feel like the world is completely impossible, even though that sentences me to the very things you're describing. So, it's not odd that people end up feeling that way. It's painful. It is really beautiful that you were able to reconcile it. It's funny how these things come up in pairs. We were in our just mo very recent interview we did had occasion to mention someone else we interviewed early on in our, this is somewhere in the 140s of our episodes. And one of the earlier episodes was with a guy named Carl Pillamer, who's a sociologist at Cornell, who wrote a book called Fault Lines, where he talked about cutoffs in families and talked about how common it is. The research he was showing was like a quarter of Americans at any given time were in the middle of some kind of cutoff with someone pretty close to them. You know, a parent, a child, a cousin, close friend, something like that. And he said that he interviewed lots and lots of people. He found a subset of people who had at least attempted reconciliation. And every single person who at least attempted it was glad they had. And moreover, they didn't all succeed, but when they did succeed, it was really beautiful. It's a, you know, that sense that, okay, it could give you a different sense of even of who you are to be able to do that. Of course, you had to do a lot of healing to be able to do that with your dad, I imagine. Mm. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, my mom had pushed me for years to, she was like, you're going to regret it if you don't at least try. I wasn't ready. And I thought, I don't need him now. You know, I grew up my entire life pretty much without him. All the things he was supposed to be there for that were pivotal in my life, he wasn't. And so what do I need him here? You know, what do I need him in my life for now? It had to be when I was ready. And it really came, you know, when I started doing the Power of One and thinking like, what else do I need to be open to? What else do I need to look at differently? That was one of them. Like, okay. You know, maybe there's something there that I'm not understanding that I don't know. And of course there was, you know,
yes,
so.
Of course. Yeah. The subtitle of my most recent book, the title of the book is It's Not About Communication. And the subtitle is Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong. And I point out in the book, spoiler alert, folks, I point out in the book toward the end, by the way, everything I know about couples therapy is wrong too.
I love it.
And I actually have a couple chapters where I talk in more depth about that, which is to say, everything anybody knows is wrong if you think you know it. In other words, if you think it's the whole story, then you become ideological rather than open to new ideas. And so you had to be able to open up to the possibility that maybe this understanding I've had of my father isn't the whole story. And I'm just throwing in, because it never is. There isn't one story that's the whole story. And then when you can open yourself up to those inconsistencies, then you can get things like reconciling and, you know, having a relationship at the end of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it does. I think that's great, you know, and bringing that into just anything. So I didn't know at the time, really, when I was working through that with my dad that, oh, this works other places. Oh, let me see about with my jealousy. Can it work in those areas too? So, you know, kind of going back to Judy's question about like, where do we start? All of that, right? Is that self-awareness? Like, okay, what's the real story? Because a lot of times we don't go back that often and go, let me go look at the stuff that I've been believing for a while. We don't take that junk drawer out and dump it out very often. And so I think it's really important to do that because things could change where now the belief that I had doesn't make sense for me anymore. It was, you know, what I had at the time. Maybe it did make sense then, or it was never really that. And it was something else, but we just don't inventory that often.
Well, and so often those beliefs, we don't even think of them as beliefs. We just say, well, this is the way it is, right? It's like you're saying about, you thought, well, this is just your DNA. You're just a jealous person. And come to find out, no, actually, it had a basis. It had things you could do about it. All the things you were saying, you came to understand.
Yeah. I'm just impressed with this, that you had the wherewithal at age 12 to get out of that car with your brother. You know, that, you know, a lot of kids would just not know what to do and just, you know, go with dad and then maybe say something to your mom later, or maybe not say something because you were ashamed and embarrassed for whatever reason, but you got out of that car and that took a lot of strength.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate that. I think a lot of it too, it really was going back to that deceit. That's just been something that was really strong, even from that early age. I felt like, oh, he's been lying about, you know, being sober and all of those things. So I think it may have more come out of that pain of the deceit, but certainly no, at 12, I didn't really realize 100% what I was doing, but in those situations, as I'm sure, you know, anyone who has grown up in that type of environment can attest to, you grow up pretty fast, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting. Growing up in that sense of having to jettison a bunch of things that are, everybody has to encounter, I suppose, at some time or other, but it's awfully difficult to encounter it when you're that young.
Yeah, certainly.
And of course, one of the effects there, and this again, this is what you're talking about, one of the effects there when you do encounter it that young is that you're not equipped yet with a lot of other information to make it more nuanced. So, it just ends up meaning, I guess I'm not lovable, as opposed to, wow, it's painful that my father is messed up like that, but it's more
Isn't it
complicated.
interesting how we just tag it with something, you know, that like whatever, and it can be different for everyone, but we just tag it with whatever it is, and then it's sort of like that's the rule then until you look into it and make those changes intentionally.
Because that tagging it thing is a way of reducing anxiety, even though you can reduce anxiety and sentence yourself to a great deal more anxiety down the line, but it is a way of making the world manageable at the moment. And so that's why we do it. That's why people who are abused will typically blame themselves, even if they know better rationally.
Oh, makes so much sense. But not to a 12-year-old, right? So,
And
to your point.
that's the interesting thing. We usually do make sense. I mean, it isn't always, from a later, more mature perspective, it may not make sense. But that's what I say when I'm telling couples, well, clearly neither one of you is batshit crazy here. That it's like, okay, you can see kind of why someone would feel this way, even though you wish you didn't, and it's understandable. But it isn't crazy, except in those rare occasions, every once in a while, where somebody is, delusional or something. Even that has a logic, but it's that's crazy logic. That's like, okay, FBI is controlling our conversation. Okay, well, no, they're not actually, but that's why you're feeling the way you're feeling,
Well, and thank you for bringing that up too, because that is what a lot of people that I work with, that's what they hear. Maybe their past relationships, you know, the person is like, when this jealousy rears up, they're like, you're
You're
crazy, you
crazy,
know, you're psycho. And then they start to wonder, well, am I? Because my friends don't act this way. My friends don't talk this way. My friends don't think this way. I'm, you know, talking to family members and they don't understand it. And so then you do start to think, well, maybe there is something really, really wrong with me. And then it becomes where it almost to a lot of people seems like that's just too much of an uphill battle if that's just how I am.
And then of course you get into situations, I'm imagining, and you can just speak to your own experience of this, but I saw you hear it a lot where so somebody is having this sort of issue, and then anything they want to complain about, a simple garden variety complaint, gets factored or gets classified as, oh, that's just your crazy jealousy, as opposed to, no, I just really want you to pick up your socks, and sort of invalidates everything,
And because you go into that where you don't trust yourself really about anything because you're constantly questioning, is this something that quote unquote a normal person would get upset about in a relationship, or is or am, do I just think and feel this way because of my jealousy? It's a really hard distinction most of the time for somebody who's really in that. And then they'll look to their partner to tell them what it should be. And a lot of times their partner, out of that frustration and being you know, upset, is like, you're crazy.
Rather than validating your feelings, they're telling you you're nuts.
You know
Because
what?
they know. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I was just, it's a sudden association that occurs to me, which comes up again a lot with couples. And it's fascinating being a, cisgendered heterosexual male therapist. And just as a man in general, I think we need to tread carefully with this one. But I'll often work with couples where the woman herself will say, I've got some PMS issues going on. Not exactly what you're describing, but it's like,
Kind of apologizing for
yeah,
certain behaviors or
there's
making
a,
excuses or.
well, there'll be a time of her month where she's saying, I know I'm irritable. And the problem is, and the guy will latch onto that. And so again, anything she ever wants to say, as I've often pointed out, well, maybe she's got PMS, but maybe, guy, you're being a jerk. There's that possibility too. And it's just tricky. It's tricky to sort that stuff out when there is this, when either party is feeling like one or the other is nuts, when they're not.
And it gets into the situation where you're constantly accusing your partner. So maybe you're constantly accusing them of looking at somebody else or constantly, you know, accusing them of maybe flirting with a coworker. Then it becomes really difficult to distinguish because, of course, they're saying, no, you know, I didn't do that. Well, what if they are,
Well, there's
right?
that too, right?
What
Exactly.
if they are?
Well, because
So,
sometimes they are. There's
because
that.
sometimes they are. So that self-trust becomes really, really important. And also just trying to distinguish, you know, is it intuition or is it fear? Like, is this fear-based? So those are a lot of different things that we have to look at to, and it's a lot and it's confusing and it's work for sure.
So how do you work? Like, do you work with individuals? Is it mostly women you work with? I'm sort of guessing that, but I could be completely wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I definitely geared the podcast that way in the beginning, certainly, and I still do, but I've had male clients as well. So I know that there are male listeners, but it is mostly geared towards women because that's what I understand the most. So of course that's how I'm going to speak. But I do one-on-one coaching, but I also have a really great trust building boot camp, which is a group 6-week program. And a lot of times that really breeds when people hear other people going through it and talking the way that they talk and saying some of the things that they think. You know, they're all initially shy for the first couple of weeks and then they start to open up and then they don't ever want it to end. Like they're like, I want to stay in it. How can we stay in touch? Because finally they have somebody else to talk to who understands what they're going through and who understands. So as long as we're not kind of feeding, you know, off of like, oh yeah, he's a jerk. Oh yeah, it sounds like
Always that
that.
risk, isn't there?
Right. Yeah. But it usually is they gain a so much support and so much insight and they feel so much better just from having other people to talk to. Forget about the coaching part and you know, training piece of it. So just having somebody else to talk to. So the trust building boot camp has really been a huge success.
And that tends to be with it's you're not like meeting with a bunch of couples, you're meeting with a bunch of individuals who are the kind of wrestling with
Yes.
those issues.
Yeah. Bunch of individuals. Yes. And I've had people say, well, you should do stuff for the partner too, because you're with them. Like, that's not, you know, that maybe down the line, but no, I just work with the people who are suffering from the jealousy because I understand that.
And do you work in person or do you work, you know,
All
virtual?
virtual. Yep. All virtual. So it makes it nice, right? That now that we can do it, I'm sure it's changed for you all too.
Since the pandemic, I gave up my office actually a few weeks, well, a couple months into the pandemic. I'm part of a group and I'm still part of that group. And I wanted to keep my colleagues, but I said to the person who owned the building, I said, I'm really enjoying this business of I hate to say it. I mean, I'm not enjoying the pandemic, but I'm enjoying working remotely. It's working very well. And so now I can work with people. It's, of course, I work with couples so that they don't have to be in the same place. It's just, logistically, it tends to be a lot easier.
And I think, you know, it's definitely important. Some people that I work with, they're also in therapy, so they might be like in group in couples therapy, and then I'm working one-on-one with the jealousy sufferer, which is really beneficial to have both because they're trying so desperately to get their partner to understand, you know, just try to understand me. And so sometimes that couples therapy is good for that.
I can well imagine. And I'm thinking as a couples therapist, it's great when someone is working on something like that themselves. It's always a tricky thing. Individual therapy or coaching or whatever is risky to a relationship often, depending on how it's, depending on what the focus is. Because a lot of times what will happen in individual work is the therapist understandably will be sympathizing, of course, with the person and subtly or not reinforcing their story of, oh, you're clearly with somebody who's a jerk and you should, move on. And it will, the person, if it, let's say it's a woman, the person herself will often not be real helped by that if she's saying, no, I actually do love this person and I want to stay together. I just need to do something about this jealousy thing so we can actually work on other stuff.
Certainly. And there have been situations where we may have started off, you know, working through this jealousy piece, and then they do realize, like, wait a second, maybe this isn't the relationship. Because, you know, coaching and therapy both, yes, it's like you said, it could be, you know, it could be in some ways bad for the relationship in terms of the relationship staying together because that person grows so much and they realize, oh, maybe this wasn't the right thing for me.
And it's so interesting how you can't tell that until you have enough sense of yourself as a valid person that then you can make that kind of evaluation. Because if somebody's just feeling like, oh no, I'm not lovable, I just need reassurance, they're not able to actually sit and say, wait, maybe this is the wrong person.
Yeah, they've attained that level of clarity.
You're in a panic
And it
there.
and I'm
And it changes too, even just going through coaching or therapy. Again, maybe you're going for jealousy, and when you start working through some of that stuff, oh, now I can focus at work because I'm not constantly thinking about what my partner's doing. I'm not on my phone trying to look them up. I don't have that anxiousness where I can't focus at work. And so now your career, like, I can actually start to put energy into some of the things that I want to do or things that I want to improve outside of just not being jealous anymore.
And it occurs to me as you're saying that, you know, if somebody is going through that kind of transformation and growth, really, I don't know, maybe I don't know if this is a fair assumption and whatever, but I'll say it. The relationship they got into when they were feeling so insecure, well, of course, you're a counterexample of this because you're married to your husband, you know, you worked it out within that relationship. I'm just imagining that it makes you prone to bad relationships, independently of your jealousy, per se. Does that sound right?
It absolutely makes you prone, I think, to bad relationships because, again, if I'm not, and I went through many, many, many of those, I'll be honest, I was fortunate that my husband stayed in it because should he have left? Probably. I mean, honestly, probably should have. I'm thankful that he didn't. And that's where I want to try to help people not get to that point. You know, usually they're already seeing the breaks and the suffering in their relationship when they come to me. But yes, to your point, prior to that, if I'm not feeling secure, if I'm not feeling like I'm worthy, I'm probably not choosing the best partners. What's interesting is I think a lot of times it really starts to show up, or people go, okay, I have to now take care of this because this person I think is really worth it.
And that sounds like your story, right? That's we're feeling that.
Like I always, you know, kind of had it in these previous relationships. It really was amplified in this one, and I knew there is kind of something different with this person. I can't keep letting this go.
Which is to say, of course, when somebody is dealing with something like jealousy, it's never the whole story. Yes, there's that, but then there's also all the other aspects where you can form a really good relationship, and then you have reason to want to protect it and save it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Tell folks how they can get in touch with you, and you know what sort of resources you are offering.
So they can visit my website at topself.com, or I'm on Instagram and all the places at Top Self Coach. And so I've got some free resources on my website. They can look at, you know, habits of healthy relationships, you know, the five things they need to overcome jealousy. So there's a lot there, as well as my own podcast called Top Self.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Great.
Great.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Shannon. And if you are having jealousy issues yourself, you might want to contact her.
Or you know, check out the resources that she has. Interesting stuff. And I mentioned in our intro, you know, I'm working on a book about betrayal, and she had interesting stuff to say about that.
She certainly
And
did.
how to grow past that. That story of her reuniting with her father in the last 3 years of his life, I found that very
Very
moving.
touching.
Yeah, indeed.
That's nice to hear. Doesn't always have a nice ending, or even a satisfying ending. It doesn't even have to be a nice ending, but often people don't get that closure
They
that they
don't.
need. So,
Yeah, and it's really sweet that she was able to find that. Let's just put in a word for our merch before we sign off today.
our
We got
merch.
merch, folks. If you go to our website, ctn7.com, we are holding, those of you who are just doing the audio here, we are holding our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Words mugs in the 15 and 11-ounce sizes. On one side, it has our beautiful logo, and the other side, it has our motto, Be kind, don't panic, and have faith. So
And it's we have
we got tote bags, we got
t-shirts
t-shirts.
and mugs.
Check it out. So you can get that through our website, ctn7.com. You can also find links to my books. Our sponsor, Laria Zilber, has her book, and I think we have a link there. Anyway,
I think so.
lauriezober.com. So,
And if you would like to be
yep.
on our podcast, if you'd like to be a guest, we also have a place where you can sign up to be a guest yourself on our
Absolutely.
podcast.
And we hope you will do that or suggest other people as well.
And we haven't mentioned this in a while. If you have questions, because we haven't been doing viewer
That's
letters, and
right.
we stopped doing that for a while.
Yeah.
So if you have any questions that you would like us to bring up on the air, feel free to write to us as well.
Yeah, the great point in particular because for one thing, we've made whole podcasts out of listener questions sometimes. And also we'll often include a listener question. We haven't, as you point out, we haven't been doing that recently, but we'll do that with guests because sometimes it really generates an interesting conversation. So yeah, something that's bothering you or something you'd like, just like to hear us talk about. Yeah, send it along, ctn7.com. And so until next time,
Remember, be kind
don't panic
and have faith.